You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. Welcome back to another episode of Naturopathic Earth Radio. I hope you're doing well. Today we got an interview. Yes, it's been about, 30 episodes since I've had an interview. And I am very excited. I did have a lot of interviews, or a lot for me was three or four back in the summer, because I was able to record those before the beginning of the school year. But once the school year begins, it is more difficult for me to meet people one-on-one to do some interviews. But luckily, I was able to interview a good friend of mine, Edmund Curran. Edmund is a freak of nature. He is not just physically fit. He tends to do very well in marathons that he enters here in the San Antonio area. He's like a jackrabbit. And I wanted to interview him because he's 53 years old. And of course, 53 is not old. I mean, I'm 43. But I think we have this idea that when we get to a certain age, we just start deteriorating, and that we need to get our cane out and start eating the early bird special at 3. Not that there's anything wrong with that, because I like to eat dinner early, and that we should go to bed early and kind of act like an old man or an old woman. But I think with the increased technology that we have and the great biohacks at our disposal, it is possible for people to age very well. And if you look back at our parents or our grandparents, 50 years old, I mean, you might as well have one leg in the grave, right? But all of you know people who are in their 50s or 60s who are very active. And I just thought it'd be really great to interview Edmund, because in his age group, he finishes near the top of all the different races that he does. So I thought it'd be good to talk to him about just ways he stays fit over the age of 50, how he eats, how he exercises, and just how he maintains his stress and sanity. I also wanted to mention that he is extremely brilliant. He is our calculus teacher at the school where I teach, and he also is a polyglot. He knows Spanish, French, and German. And in fact, this year at the school, he's teaching French because he can, because he's really smart. So I just thought it'd be a great interview. It's very relaxing, very subdued, but hopefully you'll learn a lot and you'll get some information. And as always, at the end, we do the rapid-fire pop culture questions. So please enjoy the interview. Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. And I'm here interviewing Edmund C. Curran. And the reason I wanted to interview Edmund is because he is in phenomenal shape. He is 53 years old. And he excels in many of the races that he does here in the San Antonio area. And I thought it would benefit the audience to ask him some questions about his workout regimen, what he eats, and just any keys that he has to maintaining an optimal living. So, Edmund, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Great. I just
coughed, but Gregory, I'm doing great. Thank you.
It's no problem at all. So, Edmund, you finish in the top first, top second, top three in most of the runs that you do. Is that true?
It is, but these are small races, Gregory. So, yeah, in the San Antonio Half Marathon in December, I will be in the top 10% of my age group.
And what is your age group? Is it like 50 to 60, or how does it?
60. It might be 50 to 55 for the half marathon for the San Antonio.
And you're already predicting that you're going to be top 10%?
Yeah, or top 20% maybe.
Top 20%.
You know, once a lot of people start coming, then I'm not as fast.
Yes, and you've done the Tower Run. If you guys aren't from San Antonio area, there is a run. Can you explain that run?
Well, it's a blast. It sounds masochistic, but the San Antonio Tower of the Americas is the nerds like us know what it is. It's 952 steps. That's 60 stories. And you run a mile first around the base down by the Hemisphere Park down in downtown San Antonio.
And that's pretty flat, right?
It's just very flat.
Okay.
You run a mile, and then you hit the stairs, and you go up those stairs, and it's a blast for 15, 20 minutes. So it sounds crazy to some people, but if you want a challenge, then you try the tower climb.
It sounds pretty claustrophobic. I mean, how many people are in those in that stairwell? And
yeah, it is. It's dark. Claustrophobic, maybe not, but it's definitely dark. It's dingy. There's little tiny windows, and so you're
are there drug interactions going on in the dingy corners?
No, no. Yeah. So it's dingy, and so you're just landing after landing after landing. Every landing is about one story. And you're just trudging your way. So most people are not running the stairs. They are trudging their way up the stairs.
And are people double-stepping at the beginning and then they get really tired? Or they just single-step really fast? Or
literally one story, two stories, and then that's it. And then I go to single. Yeah. You might think, oh, yeah, I'm going to go two at a time. But no, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, I imagine that. I didn't even know there were races like that exist. I know, like, we have some friends that do the Spartan races where it's like the obstacle course and you're getting all muddy and all that. But I didn't even know they did a race where you're running straight and then you're going upstairs.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
It's about three people wide. So one person will be on one handrail, one person on the other handrail. So if you want to pass anyone, you have to go between. So it's pretty annoying. It's annoying to pass anyone because it's hard. It's a hard race.
Have you ever done a full marathon or half marathons?
No, I choose to limit myself to half marathon. That's about 20 miles a week running. That's about how much I run, 20 miles a week. If I wanted to train for a marathon, I would probably have to run 40 miles a week. And that's just my age group, my level of where I'm at. Some people run 50 miles a week or 60 miles a week.
And there are those ultra marathon runners who are crazy running 80 miles a day and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy.
You betcha. That's intense. So just for my time, I work for a living. And so just for my time, I can only run 20 miles a week. And I choose not to do 40 miles a week and run marathons. I think it would be more wear and tear. Well, it would be more wear and tear.
Hmm.
And that's part of what I think you're calling me today or having me talk to you today. I try to avoid wear and tear.
Okay, well, let's talk about your past. You want to give us a quick kind of review of your childhood? What were you like? Were you an athlete in high school? Did you always watch what you eat? Or were you the typical kid who just ate a bunch of junk food, but you were just genetically gifted to be athletic? Or why don't you give us a little background?
All of the above. I was fit. So lucky with good health in my childhood, always playing, always running, never big on teams. So I was never the stars of any of my teams in high school. But I kept doing sports all the way through college and then as an adult.
What sports did you do in college? You were like running?
All sports in college were intramural. So it's just all sports for fun. Soccer, softball, which I was not very athletic for me, but it was just for fun softball. Soccer, swimming, tennis, sailing.
Sailing. Well, I forgot to mention, Edmund's from the Northeast.
Yeah, so we had sailing at our college. It was kind of amazing. But so active, yes. Okay, and then you asked me about all my food. Yes, typical kid, always eating junk food whenever I can. And in fact, I had a sweet tooth. And boy, I still do have a sweet tooth. So I eat lots of junk. I had a piece of ice cream right before this interview.
Well, going back to your high school, do you know how fast your miles were at that point? I mean, do you have a rough estimate?
I didn't run in high school. I did volleyball, basketball, and again, I was mediocre and bicycling. So did I run a mile? Not until college would I run for jogging purposes.
Were you keeping track of that?
Yeah. So actually, yeah, I do have my college time. 43 minutes for a 10K.
That's about 6 miles.
Which is 6 miles. So it's about a 7-minute mile.
Wow.
And I have never matched that since college. So I'm now slower than that. I'm now like 48 minutes. So 43 minutes to 48 minutes.
That's not bad for 30 years.
Yeah. So I don't match that college time. But
it's funny because everyone is a little different. Like I was overweight, of course, as a child. And then when I lost my weight starting in senior year and in college, And even to now, like my mileage, my minute runs have always been the same. Maybe like I'm not a fast runner. I don't know if I have proper form, but I'm like a 10-minute mile. And I do like 4 or 5 miles. And then my later miles are my fastest time. I don't know if you're similar, because I know some people are like their fastest time is the first mile and then they slow down. But I've noticed like I've always been like 9 minute if I'm pushing it, but I'm a slow runner. But you've been like a 7-minute mile, 8-minute mile your whole life.
Well, now I'm more like, much more like an 8-minute mile for running and a 9-minute mile for jogging.
Hmm.
On my weekly daily runs, a few runs a week, I'm jogging at a 9-minute.
And do you notice if your first miles are faster or your later miles are faster?
I don't have a focus on that. So I don't pay attention to it. We just go out and run. I run, and by the way, I run. You might be wondering what some of my secrets are.
Yes, the secret of your success.
I don't run alone, so that's a big choice I made. I can't run alone. I'm too boring.
Well, let's cover that with your exercise regimen in a second. Later. But so you've been essentially running since college. So you are 53. So this is 35 years or so, pretty much all the time.
No.
No.
I took a big break from college until age 39. It's funny that I remember that year. Age 39, 39th birthday, turning from 38 to 39, I was going to join Weight Watchers.
And why is that?
I was 211 pounds.
Really?
211 instead of 196, 191.
And you're about 6 feet, 6'1"?
6'2".
6'2".
And again, I'm lucky. But so 211 is overweight. 196 is where I'm shooting. I'm hovering around 196 now, which is getting closer to a BMI of 25. So I do try to track my BMI. But I forget what your question was. But have I always been a runner?
Yeah.
No. I ran through college and then until age 39, so 15 years, I just stayed walking, hiking, normal activities of daily life, but not going to the gym and not running, certainly not running or jogging. So I crept my way up to 211 pounds and age 39, I was going to join Weight Watchers. And that's when I started working out with a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I, we know good Mediterranean food, and you're going to be talking about my food here.
Mm.
We basically eat Mediterranean style and we've always known that. So she said, I don't need the advice of Weight Watchers. So I didn't join Weight Watchers at that time. Because we know what to do. It's just I don't do it.
What Jesus told Peter at the Garden of Gethsemane, it's like the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. That's like the common mantra for all of our eating, right? We know what we're supposed to do, but it's just a question of doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So I know a good, healthy balance for me of my diet, but I don't always do it. So starting at age 39 is when I worked with a trainer. So yes, I've been jogging. I've been jogging since age 39.
So about 14 years. 14 years. Okay, great. So let's take a little break and then we're going to talk about Edmund's eating. Be better than most 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds. So they always say that cardiovascular health or health in general, a lot of it's you are what you eat, right? It was, I think Hippocrates said use food as medicine and medicine be thy food. So what's a typical week of what you and your wife, and you have 2 children,
yep.
And you told me that one of your children used to make kombucha, homemade kombucha. Oh, so if you want to talk about that later, but what's a typical week like? What do you eat?
Typical. Okay. I learned this phrase. I don't know if some of you and your listeners here at the NPE radio, I love that. I love your station.
Thank you.
I automated breakfast. So I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase. I learned it from somebody. So our breakfast is usually oatmeal, and that's, it's a nice 1.5 servings of oatmeal. I use steel cut oats.
Mm-hmm.
We eat it with yogurt or milk and some frozen blueberries that are thawed.
Mm-hmm.
I throw in flaxseed.
Nice.
Oh, I've seen my cholesterol creep up. I do go to a Western doctor, what we call allopathic medicine,
yes.
Western medicine. I do keep an eye on my cholesterol level. And so he said flaxseed. It's kind of cool that he said something natural.
Do you like the taste of flaxseed? I know some people like to do chia seeds as well to sprinkle on it.
I love flaxseed.
You like flaxseed?
I like the taste in my yogurt or in my oatmeal.
And you definitely like the steel cut because Kate loves steel cut. She loves making steel cut.
Yep. I cook it slowly.
Yeah, she does too. And I don't know how you guys have the patience for it because I just don't have the patience.
Well, I cook it a batch, okay, for the week.
Okay, like on Sundays?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But so that automated breakfast works for us. And by the way, we also throw in eggs once a week, twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Typical week. Lunches, I try to do leftovers, so because we cook healthy dinners, try to have leftovers for lunch. So typical meals will be a lean protein, veggie, and a starch. Over the past couple of years, my wife and I have been cutting back on starch, really my wife first, but it certainly helps me gradually, gradually helping me control my weight, cutting back on starch. But I love that thing, you know, the plate. We try to make the plate half veggies.
Yeah.
And then maybe one quarter lean protein, one quarter starch. So that guideline.
Yeah, the USDA, because they used to use the food pyramid back in the 80s and 90s, and that was six, the basis was 6 to 11 servings of carbs, right? And then above that was going to be the dairy and the fruit. The fruits were supposed to have less fruits and vegetables than grains. And the saying is that's what contributed to making us look like the food pyramid and contributed to diabetes and obesity, because grains were the framework.
Yeah.
So the plate, I agree with the plate, 50% veggies. Some people who don't want to eat grains at all might do 60% veggies and then a lean meat and then maybe some dairy.
Yeah.
But definitely, like, the crux should be vegetables. And I think most Americans, including myself, I don't think I eat enough vegetables.
Yeah.
But you guys make a concerted effort to get the vegetables.
Like with salad. So in fact, the salad is like one whole plate full of salad. And we eat our salad right after the main course. But again, so I try to limit the size of the main course. Pasta is a big temptation to double up on the pasta. So I try not to, you know, starting the past few years, I definitely eat less pasta than I used to.
So you're eating like your meat entree and your grain or whatever first, and then you pull out the salad.
Yeah. And we might have a side veggie like asparagus or green beans or lean meats, chicken, turkey. So sometimes hamburger, sometimes turkey burger. So yes, we do eat beef at my house, but fish. Try to do fish twice a week. It's probably usually once a week, but we try twice a week.
Hmm. What about desserts?
Always do the lean meat and then the salad and then play with the starch or veggie. Dessert, I find I just really need something sweet after the meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to keep cookies in the house because I eat too many of them. A pack of Oreos can go in a few days. And so I basically try to avoid buying packs of cookies.
It's smart because we all have temptations and we're also lazy creatures. So we're not going to drive to a supermarket at 9 o'clock to go get cake or Oreos. So if the temptation's not in the house, we'll be like, I'll just eat berries or maybe some dark chocolate. Or it definitely helps not to have the temptation in there.
That's kind of my number one technique for my weak willpower and strong sweet tooth. I try to avoid buying the candy and the cookies from my house.
Yeah, that seems smart. So let's talk about your son. How did he get on making homemade kombucha? Because I push it on the students here. They know about it.
Yeah.
Kombucha is very popular now. You see so many brands coming out. So it's in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
But your son was making it a couple years ago, right?
I don't think I even helped him. He looked up an article. You know what I did, Mr. Gregory here?
How old was he at the time? 13, 14?
16 now. He's probably 13.
Okay.
He cooks. He's been cooking little scrambled eggs since he was 6 years old. And then, so he's been cooking and baking gradually. So he can make bread. He can make pie crust. But kombucha is a brewing process. It's a fermenting process. And people can go look it up. He looked it up. What I looked up was, hey, Thomas, I want you to make it. I want to encourage you. This sounds really cool. It's healthy. I just want to look it up and make sure it's not dangerous.
Hmm.
It's like, because it's sitting there on your countertop fermenting for certainly 5 days, maybe a couple weeks. It grows this.
That's SCOBY, right?
Yeah. What's it called again?
SCOBY.
SCOBY.
I forgot what it stands for. Yeah. Bacterial yeast overgrowth.
Yeah, that stands for something. It's like a carpet of bacteria floating on top. And you think, oh, no, there's a carpet of bacteria floating on my food. So I looked up and said, you know, is this safe? And so I read one or two articles. And I said, Thomas, go for it. It sounds healthy, and it was amazing. It smells fermenting, kind of like fermenting bread, the yeast, when the yeast starts rising to make your bread. Kind of like brewing beer, if someone brews beer. I've done that before. You get that fermenting smell.
And so he just, did he give it to his friends, or he just kept it at home and gave it to you guys? Or?
One of his teachers knew all about kombucha, and definitely my son shared it with his teacher, but mostly he and I drank it.
That's great. I had a student who graduated last year. His brother's in my class, and he told me that the one who just graduated is making kombucha at home, too. So I guess I'm just not really good at stuff like that, so I just go buy it, and my daughter loves it, and my two-year-old son loves it, but it's expensive to buy it all the time, so it's so much cheaper, similar to like almond milk. If you can learn how to make almond milk at home and all these things that are so much cheaper than going to the grocery store, you save so much money.
The kombucha you throw in some berries, you throw in some fresh ginger. You can make all those different flavors you see on the shelf. He made 5 or 6 flavors in a period of several weeks and then stopped, but it was awfully fun.
Yeah, and now he's over in France, correct?
Yes.
What a lucky man.
Yes.
So before we go over to your exercise regimen, so anything, do you think you do anything unique in terms of what you eat, or aside from making a concerted effort to get the phytonutrients from all the vegetables and the lean meats?
Daily vitamin. I do a Western vitamin pill.
Yeah. So what vitamins do you take? A multi?
Multivitamin. Fish oil.
Yeah.
Love that for heart health. Or just, what do they call it again? Antioxidants. I think.
Fight against that cancer.
Or it's the omega-3s. What do you know all about the omega-3s?
Yeah, that's the oils. That's the polyunsaturated fat.
I do a glucosamine. Because I am 53, I have no idea if it helps, but I keep taking it every day. Glucosamine is one of those things for the joints. So my good old knees, knock on wood, seem to be holding out with 20 miles a week. If I ran 40 miles a week, I think that would start wearing out my knees too fast. But I do a glucosamine.
Any other vitamins or minerals?
I do. Now my wife takes a thing for eye health, so I take that too. And it has stuff listed on the bottle. I figured, because my eyes are, I wear glasses every day, so.
Yeah, I've started to do that this year. I have to wear reading glasses because I'm getting old too.
Getting old, yeah.
I take the vitamin C and vitamin D and then magnesium. Those are the three. And then I take a probiotic pill.
Yeah, you got me started
most
on vitamin
days.
D.
Yeah, I got to D it up because we're so D deprived.
My wife does the probiotic. I figure I eat yogurt every day. So I don't know if I'm getting enough probiotic. But.
The best way to have them grow naturally is eat a lot of prebiotic foods because they help the bacteria already have in you grow naturally. So like the prebiotic foods would be a lot of onions, a lot of unripened bananas, the chocolate berries. So a lot of the food that you're already eating is prebiotic. All right, so let's take a break and we're going to talk about Edmund's exercise regimen and any biohacks that he does. And so we're back. So Edmund, you are a fast runner. Some of that is how you work out. Some of it might be genetics. I am jealous of you that you can run so fast. And even though you're humble about it, I'm pretty confident that if you were to grab any Joe Schmo off the street, you could probably run faster than him if you're pulling an 8-minute mile. But you don't have to comment to that because you're humble.
Yes, Albert.
All right. So what's your typical week? You say you run with a group. You want to explain that? What time and how does that work?
Yep. We are morning runners. It works for us. If you live in Texas, maybe I don't know if your listeners might live all over.
Yeah, I got some in the Commonwealth. I got some in Europe, but most of them are in Texas, San Antonio.
We are in Texas. I've run at noon once in 7 years. Running at noon in Texas is dangerous. So we run at 6 a.m. before work.
How often?
4 days a week.
Okay.
And that could be 3 or 5, average 4 days a week, including one day on the weekend. And boy, that works for us. So it works for me and the buddies I run with. And the group changes, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us.
And you notice that running in a group just makes the time pass? Because, like, for example, I cannot run or work out with people with me. I need music because, to me, the music speeds up the time. I can listen to the fast music. And I'm just not one who can run and talk. But you're the opposite. You don't like the music.
Yep, that's the opposite. So, and that's good. What your people have to find what works for them. So yeah, none of us run with music. We run together. Now, of course, if you run out on the streets, people with music, be careful. You need to listen for cars.
Yeah.
So running with earbuds, be careful. But you know, maybe one earbud, just so you can hear the traffic. But yeah, so what works for me is running with a group, not alone. And
you just chit-chat and the camaraderie chit-chat. And you push each other, kind of like CrossFit and all the other group activities where there's like accountability. Is that
yes. Accountability. Hey, you didn't show up yesterday. You said you were going to show up. That accountability helps me.
And you guys are tracking your times too, or not really?
Yeah, because we're different goals. Some of us do marathons. I only do the half marathon. So we have, throughout the year, we have different training goals. But yeah, we track our own work, but yes, we keep each other accountable.
Great. Okay, so you do that, and then any lifting?
Yeah, that's funny you should mention that, Gregory. Let's see. Age 39, I started working with a trainer, so that was 14 years ago. And that lasted about 6 years. And that wasn't year-round, because it is expensive to work with a trainer. It was once or twice a week for part of each year, and then I'd go back and work with the trainer some more, and then take time away from the trainer, work with the trainer some more. So working year-round with a trainer is a luxury for many people.
Yes.
Because it is expensive. So, but lifting, I did that for about 6 years. Let's just say 8 more years, I stopped lifting. And that made a big difference. It makes a big difference on the core. You know, mm-hmm. We call the core, that's the torso. People call it the abs, the abdominal muscles. But the core is that whole area of abs and the back. You want your back to be strong and your stomach to be strong. And boy, I was losing all that. Still running 20 miles a week, but noticing I could pull my back a couple times a year. It's like, oh no, I pulled a muscle in my back. Well, I think it's because I stopped lifting.
Working on the core.
And when I say lift, I mean core and legs and arms. So lifting, doing shoulder presses and biceps and triceps, but again, always with the core.
Do you enjoy doing that? Because I started lifting 3-4 years ago, and I'm not like bench pressing free weights or anything like that. I just, you know, every other day I try to lift as hard as I can, but I'm a cardio junkie. I'm not a lifter, and men are either in one of two camps, right? I think the majority of men are, they'll be at the gym for 3 hours lifting, and they hate cardio. And then the other guys are like the opposite. So do you enjoy lifting, or do you just do it because you know you have to, because we're getting older and we have to have the strength training and all that?
I enjoy doing group exercise class. There it is, group, because I run with a group and I do the exercise classes with a group. I enjoy doing these exercise classes that are total body workouts.
Hmm.
And so I happen to be at a gym. Can I mention the gym that I
sure.
use? We have a big chain of gyms in the United States called Gold's.
Yeah.
So I happen to go to Gold's gym, but I think most gyms have group exercise classes. CrossFit works for a lot of people, but so these are group exercise classes that are total body workouts, and that's what I like. And that's a whole bunch of leg exercises, a whole bunch of upper body workout, a whole bunch of core.
So how does it work? There's a large group of people, and you guys are just doing a circuit in a given amount of time, or how are you guys all lifting at the same time?
My gym that I mentioned, they have different classes. One of them is everybody just stays right at your little bench, your little, you know, those little aerobic steps.
Yeah.
So we do some step up, step down, step up, step down. Sometimes we lie back on that little bench to do our chest press with free weights. So it's like it's called body pump. Hmm. It's everybody has free weights and everybody has one bar with weights on it. And you can vary the weight on the bar, but you're doing either body weight work, like, you know, tricep dips, you're mm-hmm. dipping your butt down, working those triceps. So you're either doing body weight or with that bar or dumbbell. With music playing, I like having, so there I do.
There you like the music,
in my
okay.
group classes.
But when you run your runs, your half marathons, you don't do music at all.
No.
See, that freaks me out because I hate hearing the steps and I hate hearing anything that's not music because the music will distract me from running. But you're the opposite. So I couldn't do that. But.
Well, I hope your listeners find what works.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to. anyway, I listened to my steps. I actually listened to my steps, and of course, we're chatting. But yeah, I run without music.
I think the way you work out is probably the better way. Because, for example, when I do lift, I'm listening to music, and I don't really interact with anyone at the gym, and I don't have a trainer, so I just pretty much do the same three or four machines, and I'm not getting any direction. So the way you're doing it, the group, you know, the group reinforcement, you've probably have really good relationships with these people. You've known them for some time. It's fun. It's fun. Yeah. I mean, I think ideally that's kind of the road. Everyone's different, but I think just having that accountability and that camaraderie makes a big difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, I like the total body concept. Yeah. I'm not trying to make my biceps bigger. I like the total body for functionality. So having the strong core, I keep coming back to the core. And this is, by the way, this is all this that I've been talking about, this these group classes is since this summer. So I took years off of not doing core. Now here it is since this starting this summer. It's making my running feel good. Or I have not gotten injured in the past several months.
Well, let's talk about injury before we finish up here. So in the last... Since you started, you said you really started in earnest when you were 39 again. Any injuries that have sidelined you, your running? Have you been pretty injury-free?
Broke my foot twice, but that's the old twisting the foot on the pavement. So, hey, running outside is dangerous. You could twist your foot right on the edge of the pavement, but that can be fixed with a good lamp, a little lamp on your forehead. So I use
like a spelunker.
Yeah. So I run with this little headlamp. Joggers, you see joggers with lights, so please run with a light when you're outside. But so yeah, those were preventable. I didn't need to break my foot running, but
because you twisted on a curb, is that what happened?
Okay. On the edge of the pavement, not running in the dusk because we run in the morning when it's dark. But pulling my muscle, much more rare now.
Mm. You know, some hamstring problems, anything like that.
Yeah, some you're taking the garbage out. Boom, you pull your muscle. So I would say that is rare now that I am more fit.
I've been fortunate in that since I've lost my weight, you know, the last 26 years, the listeners know I was calorie in, calorie out for 20 years. So it was like I ate a lot of calories, but then I burned a lot of calories. But I was fortunate. I never really had an injury because if I had an injury, I would have gained a lot of my weight back. Oh, yes. Because I didn't have a healthy relationship with food. So I have been very fortunate, and I've never been sidelined from doing some sort of cardio for 25 years. I've been very lucky, knock on wood, very lucky. All right, so before we get to the rapid fire questions, any biohacks? Do you like to steam? The listeners know I love the steam room. Does your Gold's Gym have a steam, or do you ever use the steam room?
I don't know. It's funny. I don't take the time to breathe, do yoga, relax, and stretch. So I do not take the time to find out even if they have a steam room.
You're just in and out.
I'm kind of, so I should slow down and certainly do. I've done yoga like once a year for the past few years. I just love it.
Yeah. But, I definitely need to do it. I'm so not limber.
But steam room, I just, I can't imagine slowing down in my life now. And boy, would that be helpful. Yes. Stretching. Whenever I do stretch, it's beneficial for my body.
So before you run, do you guys in the group do a beginning stretch or an after stretch?
No, it's terrible.
Some of the studies I've seen that show that you really don't need to do a stretch in the beginning, as long as you start out slow.
Yeah.
You know, you're not sprinting at the beginning.
And so that's actually why I don't stretch beforehand. Later in the day, I often put my feet up. Now that feels incredible. Mm. But I should like stretch out my legs, put my feet up against the wall. There's stretching I should do, and I don't.
But your lack of stretching hasn't led to any muscle problems or any tears.
I get away with it. It would be beneficial. I don't do it. Same thing with yoga. So in terms of your biohacks that you mentioned, I would say I don't slow down and do those activities that could really help me.
I would recommend if Gold's does have a steam, just try it one time. Yeah. 10 minutes, it will blow you away. It's just amazing. And you get to be around a bunch of naked men wearing towels. And it's awkward, but it's so great. We could talk about cryotherapy. I know you're kind of a skeptic on it. And honestly, I have not done it. I'm hoping to interview somebody here at a local cryo lab, cryotherapy or cryo spa. But you're just not a big fan of ice baths or anything like that?
Well, there again, I'm lucky. I must stretch enough just in my daily life that I don't do ice baths. I'm skeptical of the cryotherapy because I'm thinking I'm going to, but that's just me. My choice is I'm skeptical of it. As an athlete, I get enough cool down and, so I don't want to slam it because I've never tried it and I've been skeptical enough to not research it. So
maybe we can do it together.
You and your listeners make their decisions. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's take a break and let's do rapid fire questions. All right, so let's finish up this interview with Edmund C. Curran with some rapid fire questions to get to know him, some pop culture. So we had a lot of deaths of artists in 2016. Which of the following four affected you the most? David Bowie, George Michael, Prince, Tom Petty.
David Bowie.
Why?
I've heard his music sung in Portuguese. What an impact he's had on the musical. Just
a pioneer.
If your listeners want to check out David Bowie's music in Portuguese, it's beautiful.
I mean, all these guys are pioneers. I have to go with George Michael because I listened to him so much in the 80s. I was a big fan of Wham and then all of his solo work. I loved him. A lot of people just think of us like pop, shallow pop music, but he had some good, deep songwriter songs. All right. What's your favorite decade to live in if you could pick any decade of the last 500 years?
500 years? Oh,
yeah.
I'll just go with the 80s because...
1980s.
Here, Gregory and I'm a big fan of the good 80s music.
Yes.
And that means all the new wave.
Yes.
The Pet Shop Boys.
Yes. Depeche Mode. New Order.
New Order. Yeah. So take me back to the 80s. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I tell people about the music of the 80s and they're like, it's a niche. Not everybody gets into that music. They think of new wave, they think of disco. And it's like, no, it's not disco. But it's not punk. It actually has melody.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I had to live in a decade, I don't know. I like 1850s. I like the history and music and art of the 1850s. Oh, that's a bell. Hold on. Okay. Now we're done. All right. So I would go with the 1850s. I just like the 19th century. Now, I know there's probably a lot of famine and pestilence and disease and all that. But I have this nostalgia for 19th century stuff because I just like the history of the 19th century. Yes. But definitely I love the 80s. One of the shows I like is Halt and Catch Fire and The Americans. Those are two shows that are on AMC, and they both take place in the 80s. That's kind of, and also Stranger Things. If you've watched Stranger Things, that's an 80s nostalgia show. All right, let's do another one. What's your favorite TV show right now, or what are you watching? Or I know you're a Whovian.
Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Crime shows, certain kinds. I like British crime shows. So
you want to name some? Because I'm not.
Hinterland takes place in Wales.
Hinterland. Okay. Is that on BBC? Is that on BBC or Amazon?
Netflix.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then this Swedish one called, it's got the guy, what's this? Wallander. Mm. It's all British actors, but they have it take place in Sweden.
Okay.
So, detective.
All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. What do you think about the female Doctor Who? You heard about that, right?
I'm excited.
Yeah.
There again, British. I know her from Broadchurch. She is the female lead of Broadchurch.
Was that the Doctor Who spinoff?
No, it's not a spinoff.
Something separate. Okay.
But it's an investigative detective series.
But Tennant was in that, right?
David Tennant.
Okay.
So I'm excited about her being in Doctor Who. Yep.
Well, let's go off topic. So who is your favorite Doctor? Who's your favorite Doctor?
Well, it's David Tennant.
Okay.
I have a big picture of him in my room where I work.
And who is your favorite sidekick? The girls.
I'm going to say Rose.
Rose. Which one was Rose?
Well,
she
British.
The redhead one?
Is British. It? I believe blonde.
She was the first one. Or the first Rose. Of the repackage one.
I want to say her last name is Tyler. Rose Tyler.
I think she was the blonde from the... Eccleston was the doctor, I think, when she was on it. Yeah, I like Karen Gilliam, who's now kind of popular. She's in the new Jumanji, and she's been in the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
I like her. And then the one after her, the one who's Clara, got the big brown eyes, she's in that Victoria show on Amazon. So, good. All right. And last one, let's do, who's your favorite painter? Because we are both art aficionados.
I'm going to just try to answer this one fast.
Yes.
And go with, there's hundreds of painters. I should just answer.
Well, we can do period if you'd rather do period.
Make it more specific for me, Albert.
Let's do period.
Yep.
You want to do favorite art period?
Oh, no, favorite.
Favorite painter?
What period? Anyway, when I look at art, I just get emotionally, I react emotionally. So let's just go with Edgar Degas. That's not even true. Edward Hopper. Edward Hopper. Hey, it's a little more modern than you like, Gregory.
Yes.
But
he does Hopper. Nighthawks. That's the only painting I know by him. Yeah.
I just like the cool look. It's like, what's going on in this scene? Who are those people?
Hmm.
I like to react emotionally.
Hmm. I just lack the patience, and I think I lack the vision of all 20th century painting. I like being told what it is. And so cubism and fauvism and all that stuff, the abstract, I don't think I'm deep enough to understand it. So just, that's why I like Renaissance, neoclassical, the older stuff up to about mid 1800s, because I appreciate the beauty of it. But I'd probably go with, probably Ingres, you know, I like Ingres. I like the neoclassical Vigée Le Brun. I like the portraits of Vigée Le Brun. Great. All right. Anything you want to add in closing thoughts?
I want to thank you for inviting me, and I want to wish all your listeners success on their path.
And do you have any advice you want to give somebody who's in their 40s, 50s on how they
advice is free, so what is it worth? But I try to keep moving. So if people can keep moving.
Hmm.
Keep moving. And of course, in my case, my advice to myself is watch the portion.
Mm-hmm.
So portion sizes. Watch your portion sizes. Keep moving.
Yeah, the studies show like the older you get, you have to actually lower your caloric intake. That's why like 70, 80-year-old people only need about 1,000 to 1,500 calories because, they're not moving as much. So constant moving of the body. So walks, hiking. It doesn't have to be...
Yeah.
You know, long marathons, just keep, move the body, shock the body with lifting, move the body with just moving, right? Walking and good eating.
And then just try to eat well and watch the portions. Yes.
All right.
That's my free advice. And thank you for letting me share it.
All right. All right, Edmund, take care. And thank you very much for the interview. All right, and that was my interview with Edmund Curran. I think it was great because Edmund is just honest. You know, he has put in the work and working out and eating well, and it shows just by doing the simple things day in and day out, just moving the body, occasionally shocking the body by doing some lifting, eating well, especially with the vegetables and clean meats. And by sleeping well, you can affect a change in your body. It can take time, but it's the little things, guys. It's the little things that build up to the big things. And I love how he just talks about not having the best self-discipline, and I think we can all relate to that, but how he prevents overindulging by just not having foods in the house. Now, some people can't do that because, let's say, they have kids. And with kids, you have to have, I suppose, unless you're living a really clean paleo kind of life, you're going to have processed foods and snacks and treats and cookies. And it does take a lot more discipline not to eat those foods. But as a whole, if you have those foods not in your house, it's much easier to avoid them. And I think the other great thing about his interview is that he does work out in a group. And I do envy him to a certain extent, because I think that that's a great way to work out. And that's just something that I've never done. And I don't know if it's just the fact that I'm lazy, where I can just look into finding running groups. Trainers, of course, cost money. And unfortunately, I'm a teacher, so I can't really afford that. But with the running groups and so forth, I don't know, maybe why shouldn't I try that? Why not try it? I have been a stickler to listening to music while working out since 1990. But why not try that? But anyways, I hope you really liked that interview with Edmund. And just please, if you have the time, post a review for Confessions of an Obese Child, Naturopathic Earth Radio, or Kate's Apothecary. It would really mean a lot to us. And always go check out the website at naturopathicearth.com. Until next time, guys, take care and God bless. Bye-bye.
Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth. And subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.